from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in our next Forum Hour, we hear from the playwright and the director of the political satire Mutt, Let's All Talk About Race, which is playing at the Berkeley Impact Theater. Then it's a segment all about a project centering on kids in Oakland and the stories they turned into different forms of expression after interviewing parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles who came to the United States from foreign lands. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. The GOP has found the ideal presidential candidate, a man with a multiracial pedigree, and the Democrats are scrambling to find someone with a more diverse bloodline to appeal to voters. That's the basis of Christopher Chen's new play, Mutt, Let's All Talk About Race, playing at the Impact Theater in Berkeley and co-produced with the Ferocious Lotus Theater Company. Chen and director Evren Adchikin join us to talk about what happens when elections, race, and political correctness collide. And let me introduce the two guests. Evren Adchikin is known certainly to us here at KQED. He's managing of marketing and communications at KQED, but is also well-known director and highly regarded one in the Bay Area theatrical community. Good to have you here in studio.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Christopher Chen with us, the playwright and the author of Mutt, Let's Talk About Race, currently playwright in residence at the Vineyard Theater in New York. And some of his other plays include 100 Flowers Project and Into the Numbers. And 100 Flowers Project, by the way, was a Glickman New Play Award for last year. He's also, let me give the dates of this play. It's running through June 18th at the Impact Theater in Berkeley and is co-produced, as I said, with Ferocious Lotus Theater Company. And it plays Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 7 p.m. Let's find out about the play. Christopher Chen, let me go to you first and let's talk about this play and what brought it into fruition, brought it onto the stage. It's kind of, first of all, it's a very funny play and an absurd and satiric play, but it has some pretty serious themes here about racial tensions.
Yeah. I think that, when you deal with satire, it's always a mix between the two. It's like, it's very cathartic to tell the truth in a comedic way. And, sometimes satire is the perfect vessel to kind of get at, the more truthful truths in society.
Well, the more truthful truths are that both of these political parties, and you don't spare either one of them, certainly want to get as many voters as they can and get them whatever way they can. And that gets into practical matters of race. So first we have a Afghan war hero who seems a likely good candidate. And he's descended from every race on earth, including the Etruscans.
Yeah.
But he likes Milli Vanilli. He has problems.
Yeah. The Milli Vanilli loving guy is a different character, but it's all kind of the same thing, the same point. It kind of highlights almost the confusion we have around how we, when we talk about different racial identities, different ethnic heritages, a lot of times, in a way, they just kind of become distilled into these kind of symbols or even just words. Like, a lot of times I would say our most closely, the way we relate to different races is just by the food we eat. Let's get Thai, and that's the only time you're going to mention or think about Thai the whole year. And Etruscans, I'm not even sure what that is, actually. It's just a word that has slipped into our consciousnesses, and we had a discussion about what that actually is. And Milli Vanilli, they are African-American, or they're not even African-American. They are of African descent, but we only know what...
We know them by their lip-syncing, mainly.
Exactly. The true nature of the racial aspect of it kind of falls by the wayside.
Now, this is a lot, as we've said, about race in this era that we sometimes hear is called post-racial, and a lot of that racial tension underlies the play. But the play has to do with both parties trying to get the right candidate and struggling to get a candidate out there who will garner the most votes, obviously. But you got a whole subplot here about a serial killer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be perfectly honest, that subplot kind of came from another concept. When I was first asked to do this play by Impact Theater and Ferocious Lotus, they asked if I could write a play about the Hapa experience in America. And Hapa means mixed race heritage with at least some Asian blood. At least that's the colloquial definition of it. And I said, yeah, that sounds great. And I, when I was thinking about what angle I would take on it, I also remembered another play I had kind of kicking around in the back of my mind. I'm kind of, I would say I'm a real political junkie, especially around election time. So I had this idea in my head to have a political satire about a racial candidate, sorry, not a racial candidate, just a straight up candidate who kills his opponents. And the satire would be that the fact that he kills his opponents is known and it just becomes another talking point. So I kind of decided to marry those two ideas and write a play about race, satire about racial politics during election time.
Well, when there's an assumption that the killer must be African-American because he's wearing a hoodie, was that a direct reference to an allusion to what happened with respect to Trayvon Martin, or was it maybe unconscious like Mark Cuban?
Yeah, no, it definitely was conscious. I think once I decided to put this serial killer element into the mix, it just became a little too obvious that I would, you know, play on the fears of minorities that a lot of that society holds, and so the detective goes around asking witnesses about who they saw, and whenever he asks a witness, they always say a minority of a different kind, kind of highlighting the fear that's still underneath our society. And yeah, Mark Cuban is a perfect example of how that manifests.
This is also a play about white guilt, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's that. I throw in that element into the mix too. And yeah, that's another. That's almost like the flip side of it. On the maybe the more the left side of it. You know, I do think that. Yeah, I do think that white guilt is a kind of a real thing. You know, I think that part of the tension around. The tensions around our conversations about race do stem from the fact that, you know, we have a really tortured, tangled history with race in this country. And so, you know, I do think that these tensions do get passed down through the generations, and they are inherited. And yeah, so one of the jokes or kind of like my takes on it is that, you know, from the Democratic side or the more liberal and progressive side in this play, they are very they struggle with white guilt, but they almost are kind of proud of themselves for having overcome, or they feel that they've overcome it in such a way. I guess, like, in reality, it's because of Obama, but I kind of play on the idea that maybe this kind of liberalism has kind of congealed in this kind of hazy, vague state of mind. So there's a refrain of this guy who's suffering from white guilt, and he says, he describes the way in which he's, you know, trying to live a more sustainable life. And so he says, one of the refrains is, I have white guilt, so I'm trying to be more sustainable. So I'm trying to recycle. And you know, that obviously that connection is absurd, but I think it kind of highlights the kind of like ambiguous nature we have around white guilt and the way it manifests in different ways.
Talking to Christopher Chen, the playwright who has written Mutt, Let's Talk All About Race. He's currently playwright in residence at the Vineyard Theater in New York. And the play runs through June 18th at the Impact Theater in Berkeley. It's gotten a real lot of good reviews and buzz. And what would a good play that's successful like this be without a director? Everett Otchikin is here with us in studio. He works for KQED. He's actually manager of marketing and communications here, and is also a literary artistic associate with the Golden Thread Productions, which focuses on theater works by and about the Middle East. So This is moving into somewhat different territory for you. What drew you to this play?
Really, it was Chris. Melissa Hillman, who is the artistic director of Impact Theater, approached me when Ferocious Lotus and her company were talking about commissioning Chris for this play. And Chris and I have had a longstanding artistic crush, I would say. We've been admiring each other's work as people who've been working in the Bay Area for about 10, 12 years. And I really knew that I wanted to work with him if I got the chance. So it was an easy yes. And then when I found out he really wanted to tackle a comedy and a biting political one at that, that was sort of a, you know, icing on the cake. It was really...
Icing on the cake, but a real challenge. I mean, especially with something as sort of dizzying and zany as this comedy.
It was easier than I thought it was going to be, I would say, because you're so totally right that it is very fast. It is very biting. There are quite a few jokes that are pushing against quite a few stereotypes, and tonally, you sort of have to land it exactly right so that it's offensive just in the right way. But at the same time, we ended up with six incredible actors who are both amazing comedians, but also really understand the tone that Chris is going for in this play. So I had the great pleasure of sort of sitting in the room and watching six amazing actors work and just pushing them in different ways and seeing where we could take the play. But having said that, yes, it is the kind of play I always say as a director, you know, usually after you open, you're sort of in the audience and you get to enjoy the play. And for this play, there's always this little fear about audience reaction to certain jokes or certain big political ideas that we're bringing onto the table, especially at Berkeley of all places. So this one, I actually kind of hold my breath a little bit every time I'm watching it. So I don't know if my work is done now that it's open.
Now, directing comedy has always struck me as a real challenge because, the timing and because of delivering the lines and getting the audience to respond when you want them to respond and all those kinds of things. But this is in some ways, and we heard Christopher Chin talking about it, particularly in some ways, an instructive play. It's, you know, Ben Johnson type comedy. It's real satire that's designed to be instructive. And in that sense, you're dealing with a different kind of métier here, aren't you?
Yes. And that's what's so interesting to me about this play. And, you know, in popular culture, there's a lot of these things. There is South Park. They're the best of SNL, I guess, sort of works this way. 30 Rock. There are all these great... silly, and ridiculous comedies.
In fact, South Park evolved onto the stage.
Book of Mormon in a very similar way. And underneath the silliness and the pacing and the comedy and the funny one-liners, there's a real heart, but there's also a very biting political and social commentary going on. That kind of challenge actually really gets me excited. So, yes, it was challenging, but I actually really love the idea of working on a play that's working on two or three levels at the same time, which if you've seen any of Chris's other plays, all his plays tend to work on three, four, five different levels. And when you get the right actors and the right team together where you can really hit those different levels at the same time, it becomes super satisfying.
I'm going to open our phone lines, and obviously we can talk about drama. In fact, I hope we'll talk with Everin a bit about drama here in the Bay Area, which he's been involved with for many years, and Chris Chin the same. But you may want to join us in conversation, and since this is really a play that almost engenders a conversation, not almost, it does engender a conversation about race and racial attitudes, and we hear a lot about the necessity. We heard it from Attorney General Holder and others of having racial conversations. And just like to put the question out to you, our listeners, what should we be talking about when we're talking about race? Echoing Raymond Carver a little here, but, you know, what is important in terms of the whole topic of race and racial differences, particularly in what, since Barack Obama was elected president, has been often designated as a post-racial era. You can join us. In fact, we welcome you. This is a half-hour segment, so now would be the time. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to join the program with any questions, comments, or opinions. Again, question maybe looming in some of your minds, what should we be talking about when we're talking about race and racial tensions and getting them out there and getting them sort of on stage or highlighting them in some way, but also talking about drama. And this drama specifically, if any of you have had an opportunity to see it, you can also email us, forum@kqed.org. It's playing through June 18th at the Impact Theater in Berkeley, and it runs Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 7 p.m. You can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. And you can also, of course, join us by tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is at @KQEDForum, or by going to our Facebook. And Christopher Chen, just want to get a little more background about you, because you say all your plays seem to be spectacles of mortality. What do you mean by that?
I don't remember where I said that, but that is accurate, I think. I do think that when you kind of get down to the nitty gritty of what is underneath a lot of works of art, it kind of does get back down to the question, the basic questions of life and death. Even in this one, I think that if we're kind of trying to tease out what the conservatives, for example, are scared of, if we were to assume that they're, a little scared of a new multicultural generation, I think it does kind of boil down to they're scared of dying off on a very primal level. It's almost like the symbol of their own demise or mortality. And so that kind of getting down to the roots of what is beneath a fear of characters, fear of us all, fear of myself. I do think that mortality is a big driving force. And spectacles, I'm a big fan of spectacle. In theater, I do like to make kind of almost maybe as a paradox. I do like to have theatricality that is vibrant and spectacular.
Now, didn't you do puppet shows as a kid?
I did watch puppet shows as a kid. I actually made puppets as a kid because I was inspired by the Muppets and I was inspired by Sesame Street. I was a big Jim Henson fan. I love the Lion King too.
And now you're working on an Asian Murat Saad, which actually, so I've read, brings me to another question, and that is how your personal experience, which, like I say, I want to kind of open up the whole question about race and what we should be talking about when we discuss particularly racial tensions and racial concerns here in America and how they play their way into politics. What about your own personal experience?
It's kind of interesting. I was born and raised in San Francisco, and I went to a Chinese immersion program, K-5, and in where you learn Chinese as a first language. And there were African Americans in my class. There were blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids in my class, and there were obviously Asians and also some Hapas too. In a way, I was kind of born and raised with the in kind of almost like a multicultural wonderland. It didn't really occur to me until I kind of entered maybe middle school, high school, and definitely college and post college. Just how much race actually does affect things. Even in middle school, looking back on my middle school experiences, I did feel kind of like this, I was kind of a reclusive little kid, a little teenager during those formative years. And I do remember, there were, different big groups and cliques that formed. It was only when I looked back on it that I realized that, that clique was all Asian and that clique was all white. And I kind of didn't fit into either. And yet I did kind of want to fit into both. I kind of felt an affinity for both. So kind of reexamining those kind of underlying tensions in hindsight has been a really interesting experience for me.
And what about for you, Evren? You've got a Turkish pedigree. That's very different than seeing things in terms of color. But race certainly, when people try to put it in the context that we're in a post-racial era and that racism has on so many levels been diminished, which I think it has. There's a positive way of looking at it. And then, suddenly the Donald Sterling story will emerge or something along those lines. And you still do see, you go on college campuses, you see kids of color, mm-hmm. congregating together and so forth. And in politics, which is really what this play is about, mm-hmm. it still continues to play an extraordinary role, particularly when you have a Republican saying, we've got to get Hispanic voters, got to get brown voters.
Well, it's really interesting because having grown up in another country where ethnicity is a very big divider, I don't have the same sort of experience personally around race growing up. Having said that, moving here at 18 for college and then staying, you become very aware of it very quickly. And the thing that's been really interesting, having grown up in the Bay Area, which I think this play really speaks to, is we sometimes have a tendency to feel like if you say the right words or if you don't say certain words, that somehow racism has gone away. And that we feel pretty good about ourselves, about how forward we are in this. But as a person who is theoretically a person of color, although I represent as Caucasian, which makes sense because my ancestors were from the Caucasus, and as a first-generation immigrant, I'm very aware of this because things get said in front of me with assumptions around my race that become very shocking because – and sometimes they're not even conscious of the fact that this is happening. And I think the thing that this play puts forth, which I really appreciate, is that we need to keep talking about it. We cannot hide behind PC words and we cannot – yes, that's very helpful. Stop saying hateful things is very helpful. But sometimes we can use that so that we're not actually talking about the problem. And I think the subheader for the play, you know, let's all talk about race – is very literal in the play.
It's almost like a solicitation.
It is, and that's what the play ends on, really, more than anything, is all of us really don't know what we're doing when it comes to race. We're doing better, as you said, which is thank God. I mean, you know, considering this country's history. But we actually don't really know what we're talking about. And until we make it okay so that people can really talk about these things, it's not going to get any better. And yes, it is amazing that we have an African-American president who's actually half African-American, which I find really interesting. And the play sort of talks about the experience of mixed race candidates in the system. Yes, that's a big step forward, but it's not the end. It's barely the beginning, actually.
When you mentioned before, for example, the play playing in Berkeley and you talk about the Bay Area and so forth, what about, I mean, thinking about, will this play in Peoria? I mean, is this the kind of play, for example, that really has the kind of reach to it potentially to go out into the heartland?
I would hope so in the sense that it's very funny. And the thing I like about it is that, and I think why I could see it doing well somewhere like the Midwest or a even more conservative area of the country is because it's not like we're pulling any punches when it comes to the left either. I think that's what I love about the play is that it's holding everyone responsible. And that's one of the joys of working on the play is really being able to, as a liberal man myself, looking at yourself and trying to figure out how you can laugh at yourself and the ridiculous things you say and do to do the
kind of all-purpose ridicule going on here.
Exactly. So I think – and we did actually already send the script to some theaters in Chicago and that kind of thing. So hopefully someone else will bite on it because I do think before 2016 when we're going back into the election, you know – these sort of plays and these sort of pieces have to be out there so that we're talking about the right stuff the right way.
You have hopes for that, Christopher Chin?
Yeah, and I would actually just add that I actually had some conservative relatives come to the play, and they absolutely loved it, too. You know, they said it was because, oh, yeah, you stuck it to the Democrats, too. But I also think that just in a bigger way, you know, just the fundamental absurdity of saying that we live in a post-racial society right now and we can end the conversation of race is something that is, you know, something, an absurdity that we can all find absurd.
Mutt, let's all talk about race. Again, the play runs through June 18th at the Impact Theater in Berkeley. It's co-produced with the Ferocious Lotus Theater Company and plays on Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 7 p.m. Thank you, Christopher Chin. Good luck with ongoing success with your plays.
Thank you.
And Christopher Chin is now currently playwright in residence at the Vineyard Theater in New York. And Evren, good to have you here. Evren Odkishkin, who is also Manager of Marketing and Communications, KQED.
Thank you so much.
And also Literary Artistic Associate with the Golden Thread Productions. And when we return, we're going to talk about Invisible Americans on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.